All right, good morning, everybody. If you can, turn to Acts chapter 25. I'm going to try to get through the whole thing. It's 27 verses. Near the end of Acts, I'm going to be going through a lot more verses than I typically do. Because right now, Paul's at his trial, or he's been imprisoned, and now he's going to be meeting the new governor, Festus, and then also going to be talking to Herod Agrippa II, King Herod. Not the one that was psycho and pretty much killed everybody, but the one that had a little bit more calm. To get you guys caught up, Paul, he was arrested, or when he came back to Jerusalem, he went to the apostles, told them what was going on, his trip to Greece, and everything that was going on in that whole missions trip, and then the apostles were like, well, we have some concerns. There are some Jews that were saying that you no longer want to follow the law and that you're teaching against the law. And if you remember, we told the Gentiles that they didn't have to follow the law, but they had to abstain from sexual immorality, offering meat to idols and drinking blood. Which, that last one, I don't think any of us are doing anyways. I don't think that's going to be hard for any of us to stop doing. And so then they're like, okay, well, in order to show that you are not against the Jews, that you still follow the customs of the Jews, we have four guys that they're going to be ending their purification cycle. And so they have to go to the temple and they have to offer the cleansing sacrifices and the offerings and stuff like that. And so Paul was like, okay, I'll do it. So they went, they shaved their head, they went to the temple, they offered the different offerings. And then as they're coming out, the Jews who saw him going in with these other men, and they assumed that they weren't Jews, they started saying that Paul was taking them into the temple proper, like the main part, which non-Jews weren't allowed into. And so they're saying that he was committing blasphemy and that he was defiling the temple. And they started a riot right there. And then the Roman commander came up, separated Paul from the rest of the group, asked him what was going on, and then arrested Paul, separated him, was about to beat him. And then Paul goes, is this what you could do to a Roman citizen? And that freaked everybody out because, if you don't remember, when we went over the difference of Roman citizens, that a proper Roman citizen, a natural-born Roman citizen, you could not just beat if you wanted to beat them. Whereas everybody else, who cares? That's obviously Roman law, not our law. I'm not telling you guys to go and start beating people. All right. So then it got the commander all worked up and scared because if it got back to Caesar that he was about to beat a Roman citizen without going through the trial, without going through the courts, then that commander could actually be taking on that punishment on himself. He could be beaten and thrown into prison and stuff like that. But in that chapter, what was interesting, and it has to sort of do with what's going on here, is there was the difference between the Roman commander and Paul. Paul was a natural-born Roman citizen, whereas the Roman commander got his citizenship by serving in the military. And how that's going to tie into it is how Paul, the power that Paul has once he is teaching, or not teaching, but once he's before Festus and Agrippa, the amount of power that he presents before him. It's much like when we look at today's standards, and I know right now the whole immigration thing is a big controversy. So regardless whichever side you are on, we have laws that are for U.S. citizens, and we have laws for immigrants, right? They're not necessarily the same laws. Because a non-U.S. citizen, they don't fall underneath our Constitution. And so their right to a jury by or a trial by jury isn't there. Now, obviously, they have the due process. They have all the other stuff that does go along with it. But this whole thing of citizenship or this class of citizenship is not anything different. Now, what they get that we don't get, I wish that it would be kind of cool, is if you're tried as a prisoner in Roman times, you can actually plead with the court to be able to go and plead your case before Caesar. Imagine if you were on trial and you were able to plead to put your case before the president. That's how much power, that's how they designed their thing. Now, how does this all have to do with us? How does Paul's trial have anything to do with what we're going through today? In a lot of ways, it doesn't. It doesn't have to do with what we're going through today, but it has to do with what we're going to be going through. Today's title is Innocent Blood, because Paul, in all senses, was innocent. The Jews, they love to, really, these Jews, not saying all Jews, these Jews love to commit murder against people. They did it with Jesus, they did it with Paul, they did it with Stephen, they did it with a grip of the apostles and the believers. And Paul even addresses that with Agrippa. But in chapter 25, verse 1, it says, 3 days later, 3 days after Festus arrived in Caesarea to take over his new responsibilities, he left for Jerusalem. Come on. Where the leading priests and other Jewish leaders met with him and made their accusations against Paul. So these Jewish leaders, mind you, this is 2 years later. This is 2 years after Paul went back into Jerusalem and did the whole ceremony and did everything. This is 2 years later. Talk about holding on to a grudge. That they waited for the new governor to come. They waited for him to come to Jerusalem, and they still pleaded their case against Paul. Why would they do that? Why would there be such an urgency for them to want Paul dead so much? It has to do with the fact that we've hit on the part where it's about their power. But what he brings up questions everything that they believed in their entire lives. It questions their whole hierarchy system. It questions everything, their sacrifices that they tell the people to make. It's not just them losing the power, but it's them losing their image, who they were to begin with. Everything that they knew. Imagine if you had trained your entire life for something. Let's say you're training for a sport your entire life. From when you're a kid, you wanted to be, we'll go with the NFL. You trained, you got all the way up to it, you were drafted, and then the NFL just disappeared. And then something else came up. So to where everything that you're training for was now obsolete. That's how they looked at it. Now, what they didn't get, and they didn't get what Paul was getting at, is that Jesus fulfilled everything that they did. That they were already coming in stronger than the new believers, because they knew the scriptures. They knew everything of the Old Testament. Obviously, the New Testament wasn't there yet. But they knew it all. But in their minds, this man was a threat to their way of life. This man is a threat to their whole belief system. They didn't understand that what he was talking about was a completion of their belief system. So verse 3, they asked Festus for as a favor to transfer Paul to Jerusalem, planning to ambush and kill him on the way. Now if you remember, those men that took the oath to not eat or drink, they're dead if they actually fulfilled that oath. But people are still wanting Paul dead. They are still wanting to get their hands on him. They didn't want to go through the courts at this time. They wanted a vigilante justice, or what they thought was vigilante justice. They wanted to take matters into their own hand. Now, as we look through Scripture, when has that ever worked out good for people? When people, when they try to take matters into their own hands, they tend to fall flat on their face. Look at Peter when Jesus was saying, look, Satan has been calling for you. He's been asking me to allow me to tempt you. And Peter's response was like, you know what, no. No matter what happens, I'm good. I'll never deny you. I'll never turn my back on you. I'm always going to be loyal. And then Jesus goes, no, no, no. You're actually going to deny me three times tonight. You are going to turn your back on me. You are going to reject me. You are not as strong as you think you are. But Peter, constantly in his own pride, says, even if the rest of them deny you, I will never deny you. Even if they all leave, I'll never leave. And then we all know the story. As Jesus is on trial, Peter's standing by a fire. The soldier comes up, or a person comes up and says, hey, aren't you one of the people that was with Jesus? He goes, no, 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 I don't know who you're talking about. And the soldier goes, yes, I saw you. You were with them. He goes, no, no, no. And then some time passes, and then a third person comes up and goes, surely you were. Come on. He goes, I never knew the man. Because he was trying to do it in his own power. He didn't believe, or he didn't fully understand what Jesus was telling them. They didn't truly trust in the fact that Jesus said he was going to help them. He was going to send somebody to help them. They didn't fully understand what was going on, and so they tried doing it in their own power, in their own... As that smell is wonderful. He fell flat on his face because he tried doing it in his own power, in his own way of doing it. And so it's the same thing that's going to happen here, is that the Jews try to do this on their own. They don't want to go through the actual proper system that God had set up, the Ten Commandments, the law of Moses, the Levitical law. They didn't want to go through that. Because they knew that everything that they had to bring up against Paul was false accusations. Everything that they had to say against him, all these accusations, were all built on lies. And that's ultimately what this world is going to do with Christians, is they're going to build their accusations on us based upon lies. A lot of times they try to say that Christians, we base our bias on Islam and other religions on a minority, on a small percentage of people. Because they try to say that the fanatics, okay, we all know the Islamic fanatics, the terrorists, the ones that are going around committing jihad and killing people. They're saying, well, that's just a small percentage. That's only 5% of Islam. Now, that doesn't sound like very many people, right? When you put it in a percentage, that's not that many people. But how many people are in the religion of Islam in the world? There are millions of people in the Islamic religion. Now, just take 5% of 1 million. How many is that? Anybody? Have a guess? Math? Come on. I know I'm asking a lot from you guys. Huh? You don't know? What is it? 50,000? 50,000 people. And they want nothing more than to see everybody else dead. If you don't convert, they want you dead. And so now imagine if there's about 50 million to 100 million Islam, 5% of that. That's not a small number anymore. That's quite a bit of people that are wanting us dead. But yet they try to turn it on us, saying that we're the ones that are intolerant. We're the ones that are bigots. We're the ones that are truly not loving. So the biggest thing is I want you guys to understand that there is going to become a time to where we will be put on trial. We will go through these trials, go through these tribulations. There might even come a time where we have to stand up for our faith within the court of law that is already against us. And so just like what was happening with Paul, just like what happened with Jesus, just like what happened with Stephen, just like what happened with all the different apostles, and even John the Baptist, just like what happened with them, it's going to happen to us. And Jesus even told us that we will be persecuted. We'll be persecuted because of Him. Not because they reject us, it's because they reject Him. They hate us because they first hated Him. Why do they hate God so much? Why is there such hatred for God? The creator of everything, the one that designed everything and put it all into place, the one that set up the fact that Jesus was to come and die for their sins. It's because of the same thing that was happening with the Jewish leaders. He goes against everything they were taught. He goes against everything that their lifestyle was for. The hardest thing for people to do when they come to Christ is give up their old lifestyle. I can't tell you how many youth that I've talked to, and I thought they were ready to give their lives to God. I asked them, okay, are you ready to make that step? And they're like, after I get out of high school. Because everything after high school just becomes so much easier, right? People are afraid of what God requires. And that's ultimately what they're wanting to hear. That's why they wanted to kill Paul. That's why they wanted to put an end to these believers. It's because they were shaking up things. They were questioning these people's livelihood. And so, picking up in verse 4, but Festus replied that Paul was in Caesarea and he himself would be returning there soon. So he said, those of you in authority can return with me. If Paul has done anything wrong, you can make your accusations. About 8 or 10 days later, Festus returned to Caesarea, and on the following day he took his seat in the court and ordered Paul to be brought in. When Paul arrived, the Jewish leaders from Jerusalem gathered around and made their serious accusations they couldn't prove. So, imagine going into the courtroom and making an accusation against somebody that was false. Look at what's going on today, that there are numerous stories that you hear about that people are coming up and making these false accusations. And now I'm not saying that we need to dismiss all of them, okay? But there is a reason why we require proof, why we require evidence. There are, for instance, in college, there was a young man that was in college. He was at a frat party. There was this girl. She had already slept with several other men that night. And she was drunk. She goes and sleeps with him. And then 2 weeks later, says that it wasn't consensual, cried rape, and this campus had these laws that basically without there need to be any evidence, without there needing to be anything, this boy was expelled and he was about to go into his like medical side, his undergraduate. And basically now he can't go to any college because of that black mark. And then, mind you, it's already been proven that what happened wasn't what she said it was. They have text evidence. They have her own friends have come up and said that it didn't happen that way. But yet, this young man's life is ruined because of that one occurrence. Like I said, I'm not saying let's just throw out every single rape cry. No, but there does have to be evidence of it. There does have to be proof. That's why our courts isn't set up the way they are. And the Romans were the same way. But these men, they were coming in, and they figured if they could just be loud enough, if they could make enough accusations, the court's not really going to look into it. There's going to be too much time that's going to be taken. So in verse 8, Paul denied the charges. I am not guilty of any crime against the Jewish laws or the temple or the Roman government, he said. Then Festus, wanting to please the Jews, asked him, are you willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial before me there? So this is an underlying theme with the Romans. Mind you, the strongest group that the world has ever known by this point. People that like to show their power. They would crucify people. They would beat them. They would imprison these people just because they wanted to. But yet they're always constantly trying to please them. When we look at Pilate, why did Pilate ultimately go through with it? Why didn't he just release Jesus when he knew that Jesus was innocent? Why did Pilate then have to go through the whole thing? You know, I wash my hands of the blood of this innocent man. Why did he go through that? Because he was afraid of the Jews' uprising. He was afraid of a riot. He was trying to please the people that they were authority over. With the commander, why did he give him off to Felix? Because he was afraid of the Jews. Why did Felix not release Paul when he knew that he was innocent? Why did he keep him in jail? Because he was trying to please the Jews. Same thing with that's going on here is Festus is trying to keep the Jews happy. They didn't want a riot. They were afraid of what would happen if a riot ensued. In all of the scripture, Pilate is the one that actually brings that up. That if there was a riot, then Caesar would, or the Roman government would be have to step in and relieve them of their power. And so he was trying to please them. So he brings this up. Hey, you know what? How about you come with me? We'll go to Jerusalem. We'll do the trial there. And then we'll wash it all clean. It'll be all good. But remember, why did the Jews want them to go back to Jerusalem so that they can ambush them. They can overrun them. They can kill Paul without there being a trial. Paul, remember, he knew the first time that they conspired to kill him. So he goes on in verse 10, it says, but Paul replied, no. This is the official Roman court, so I ought to be tried right here. You know very well I am not guilty of harming the Jews. If I have done something worthy of death, I don't refuse to die. But if I am innocent, no one has a right to turn me over to these men to kill me. I appeal to Caesar. So this is the part where he now uses his full authority as a Roman citizen. He's saying, okay, I'm not going to get... He sees that he can't get anywhere with them. That he, even though he's innocent, and even though that Felix, Festus, everybody has seen that he's innocent, he's like, okay, now I'm going to have to go to as high as I can. I appeal to Caesar. I want my day in court. I want to see it right before Caesar. And then that sends Festus kind of crazy. Festus conferred with his advisors and then replied, "Very well, you have appealed to Caesar, and to Caesar you will go." A few days later, King Agrippa arrived with his sister Bernice to pay their respect to Festus. During their stay of several days, Festus discussed Paul's case with the king. There is a prisoner, he told him, whose case has left, who was left for me from Felix. Am I right? No, I'm way off. All right. Who was left for me by Felix. When I was in Jerusalem, the leading priests and the Jewish leaders pressed charges against him and asked me to condemn him. I pointed out to them that Roman law does not convict people without a trial. They must be given an opportunity to confront their accusers and defend themselves. So now he's trying to explain to King Agrippa to kind of get an idea of what to do with this Paul, how to deal with this man Paul. And so then in verse 17 it says, "When the accusers came here for the trial, I didn't delay. I called the case the very next day and ordered Paul brought in. But the accusations made against him weren't any of the crimes I expected. Instead, it was something about their religion and a dead man named Jesus, who Paul insists is alive. I was at a loss to know how to investigate these things, so I asked him whether he would be willing to stand trial on these charges in Jerusalem." Now, what's interesting is he's putting himself into the best light. Isn't that what a lot of people do? Especially when they're trying to, say, ask somebody else for help. Even if it has to do with you. The one I always find funny is, I have a friend of mine that's going through this. How can I help them? Really? Is it a friend or is it you? You just don't want to say it's you. And so Festus is here. He's like, "Well, there's this guy. The Jews approached me, but I did all my job. I did my job. I told them that there has to be a trial. They have to come back over here." And then he makes it sound like the whole Jerusalem thing was his idea. He's like, "Look, I was trying to appease everybody. I was willing to send them to Jerusalem to stand trial there, and we would handle it there, but he didn't want to." No, remember, it was the Jews that asked for them to be put, for Paul to be sent to Jerusalem. There wasn't anything about him. He was kind of oblivious to how conniving the Jews could really be. Now, mind you, the Jews then are not necessarily the same as the Jews now. Okay, do not paint this broad brush over all Jews saying that they're all evil and they're all trying to just kill everybody. No, that's not the way the Jews are. This is literally a small group. This was 70 people. The Sanhedrin. So then he goes, if he'd wanted to go to Jerusalem, verse 21, "But Paul appealed to have his case decided by the emperor, so I ordered that he be held in custody until I could arrange to send him to Caesar." Verse 32, "I'd like to hear the man myself," Agrippa said, and Festus replied, "You will tomorrow." Verse 23, "So the next day, Agrippa and Bernice arrived at the auditorium with great pomp, accompanied by military officers and prominent men of the city. Festus ordered that Paul be brought in. Then Festus said, 'King Agrippa and all who are here, this is the man whose death is demanded by the Jews, both here and in Jerusalem. But in my opinion, he has done nothing deserving death. However, since he appealed his case to the emperor, I have decided to send him to Rome. But what shall I write the emperor? For there is no clear charge against him, so I have brought him before all of you, and especially you, King Agrippa, so that after we examine him, I might have something to write, for it makes no sense to send a prisoner to the emperor without specifying the charges against him." So, how many times right there did he just say that there was no charges No legal charges against Paul. He said it three times. There was no reason for this man to be put to death. I can't send him to Caesar without saying a charge. And at the very end, for it makes no sense to send a prisoner to the emperor without specifying the charges against him. So why even have him at that point? You, the governor, can't even come up with something against this guy to make it worthy to be sent to Caesar. Now, imagine that. If we were able to appeal to go before the President of the United States in a legal matter as a prisoner, and you get to there, or let's not even go to the President. Let's say we go to the Supreme Court. Okay? We bypassed all the other courts with no charges, but yet somehow we're now before the Supreme Court with, once again, no charges. How much of an idiot would you look like? The Supreme Court would be like, why am I even listening to this? It's the same thing that what Festus is getting at here, is that the emperor will look at him like, why is this man here? Why was he even sent to me? Why did this ever get to this point? And Festus doesn't want to look like the idiot. But once again, he's still trying to appease. Now, what you have to understand is as soon as Paul made his appeal to Caesar, it was out of Festus' hands. Even if Festus at this point wanted to release Paul, he could not, because it already got into the appeal process. I forgot how to drink. And so, are you guys ready for these? For this time? Are you ready for people to bring up false accusations against you and for everybody else to believe it and just go along with it? Because that's where this world is going. I would love to say it's universal the way that this world is going. No. It's very much against certain groups of people. You can call me a conspiracy theorist, whatever. But based upon how the Bible talks about it and how the Bible lines it all up, it is clear for us to see that this world is not going to get any better. This world is going to get worse. And I'm going to end off on this as an example. There's so, like I said, the whole immigration thing is a big controversy going right now. And even within the church, there's different sides. There's the side that believes that we should just have open borders, because that's what love is. Love brings everybody in, and we need to be, us that are more fortunate, need to be taken care of those that are less, which is true. Okay? That is true. I'm not saying that we shouldn't take care of the homeless, that we shouldn't take care of the less fortunate. No, because we do. We need to take care of them. My stance is there's plenty of them around us. But what's interesting is, then if you ever have any good arguments against that, then they say, well, we just need to have open borders. Well, if we have open borders, then there would be no United States anymore. There'd be no Mexico. There'd be no South America. There'd be no Canada. There would be no difference in countries. What does that start to sound like? What does the Antichrist bring about? A one world nation. There are no more countries. There are no more borders. We're all one. And so when people, they talk about that type of stuff, you know, like just clicked on me this last week, I'm like, that totally sounds like it's all gearing up to go in one direction. As much as people like to push against, that's ultimately what's going to happen. And the reason why we know that is because that's what the Bible tells us is going to happen. That one man is going to rise up and cause all nations to go underneath him. All nations will bow down to this one man. All nations will pledge their authority or pledge their allegiance to this one man. Because he brings about this false sense of peace. And then he makes a war on God. And we could see that that's where this world is going. We could see it clearly. If you actually study the Bible, read the scriptures for yourself. Don't just listen to me. Just listen to somebody on the radio. Don't just listen to other people. Read it yourself. Dig into the Word yourself, and you will find that God has already designed or has already declared how things are going to be. And even though this world is going to get worse, us as Christians shouldn't fear it. We have nothing to fear because we know how it ends. Go to the end of Revelation. See how God, in the end, wins. And know that God has already has everything under His control. This world is going in a direction because God is letting it go that direction. Because you have to remember something that we find in the book of Job. Satan had to go before God to tempt Job. Satan can only go so far. God at any point can step in and tell him no. As much as Satan wanted the angels to worship him instead of God, when he was cast out of heaven, he understood how insignificant his power was compared to God's. And now Satan's just like a toddler throwing a temper tantrum because he didn't get his way. He's trying to make everybody else's life miserable, just like his is. Nothing against the toddlers in here. I love kids. I really do. But are you ready? Because the innocent blood that is happening all over the world to Christians. No other religion is persecuted like Christians all over the world. In America, we do live in this nice little safe bubble where the rest of the world, it's not that way. Even in what they call civilized societies, in Europe, Christians are being persecuted and killed. Nothing like in the Middle East, nothing like in Vietnam or North Korea or China or any of those other places. But the government just stands by and lets it happen. And you can see how... shouldn't be me. And we can see how that's how the United States is going. That's the direction that it's going. We like to take our government structure from Europe and say, oh, look, that's how we need to be. But also look at the state of Europe. And don't be surprised when it happens here. But the biggest thing is that we need to be staying on our knees praying. How is it that we can stay strong? How is it that we can stay steadfast? How is it that we can be ready to do God's will? Let's pray. God, we just praise you for this morning. I just ask that you would be with us this afternoon as we go our separate ways. Allow us to have a good fellowship while we're here. Allow us just to bless you as we get to know each other and as we get to have this communion with each other. And allow us to have the strength and the boldness just to stand up for you. Allow us to see you more clearly and to be living in you more clearly. Allow us to see your will and do your will. In Jesus' name, amen. All right.